You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. And I have to say, that might have been the most impressive victory of the season for the first place Mets, as they found a way to beat Brandon Woodruff, an all-star who just looked dynamic early in that game. And in the seventh inning, the Mets put together a rally and end up victorious. I'm going to talk about that game in the first segment. Then in the second segment, I'll talk about Tylor Megill, the rookie who continues to impress and might just be angling to keep his spot in the rotation long term. I'll talk about that and compare him to some other rookies of the past for the Mets. Then finally, in the third segment, I want to talk about the comments Zach Scott made prior to the game. The Mets GM met with the media, talked about some of the guys coming off the injured list, and also about his approach at the deadline. So we will get to all of that. But first, for those of you who don't know, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Entering this game, Brandon Woodruff had a 1.87 ERA. He is an all-star. He could be the all-star starter because Jacob deGrom's not going. And he looked every bit of that early on as he was perfect going through the Mets lineup the first time through. Brandon Nimmo got to him in the fourth, though, ripping a leadoff double. The Mets play a little bit of small balls. Francisco Lindor bunted him over to third. Dominic Smith then drove him in with an RBI sacrifice fly. And he's been great this month. I know it's early on. We're only, 5 days in. But Dom's hitting .444 with a .450 on base percentage and a slugging percentage over 1,000. His OPS is over 1,500. Three home runs, two doubles, seven RBIs. He just continues to rake, has a seven-game hitting streak going, and you got him batting third behind Lindor and Nimmo, who continue to get on base. That is a great recipe for success with this team moving forward. And you just look up and, man, with him hitting, Pete Alonso coming around, you know at some point Conforto and McNeil can really start to pick things up and be better than they have been. This lineup is really starting to gel, and we saw that in the seventh inning. But before we talk about the big rally, how did we get to that point where the game was still tied entering the seventh? It came down to some great pitching by Megill and the Mets bullpen. Megill goes out his third start, first time facing a team other than the Braves, and he was excellent. He only gave up a solo homer in the top of the fourth inning. Other than that, he only allowed one more hit. He walked two. He struck out seven. Didn't have the best command of his slider, but his changeup was just absolutely dynamic. He got eight swinging strikes on that pitch. A whiff rate over 50% again. That changeup really looking like a weapon when you pair it with that fastball in the upper 90s that he's locating really well. There is something here with Megill, and I'll talk about that more in the next segment. But he gets you through five, kind of ran out of gas at the end. Did walk the pitcher in that fifth inning. The Mets didn't test their luck by sending him back out for the sixth. The game was tied at that point, 1-1. You don't want to lose it, so you go to your high leverage guys. Aaron Loop comes in, has a perfect sixth inning. Seth Lugo has a perfect seventh inning. Both of them pick up two strikeouts in their innings of work. And then you eventually get to the bottom of the seventh, where the Mets are facing Woodruff, and he's only at 64 pitches. You're wondering, is this all-star going to carry the Brewers all the way through and maybe pitch a complete game? Like, how deep can he go? The Mets aren't doing a great job, you know, wearing him down with his pitch count, and then all of a sudden, it just falls apart for Woodruff. You have Francisco Lindor draws a walk, and it was great discipline in that at-bat. There was the first pitch that was a strike, and then everything else was just kind of around the zone close enough, and he did not chase anything. Draws the five-pitch walk. Dom then steps into the box, gets a base hit that puts runners at the corners for Pete, and then Pete Alonso with some first-pitch hitting laces a double into the left field corner, which scores both Lindor and Dom all the way from first, and the Mets have a 3-1 lead. Later in that inning, Michael Conforto gets a base hit that drives in Pete. The Mets are up 4-1, and Woodruff is knocked out in that seventh inning. Trevor May came on to pitch the eighth inning and was once again great, had another scoreless outing, his 10th in a row. The Mets almost added to their lead and really blew the game open in the bottom of the inning as they got the bases loaded with nobody out. But unfortunately, Kevin Pillar hit a shallow fly ball that wasn't deep enough to score the runner from third, and then Pete Alonso hit into a double play. So the Mets only had a 3-run lead heading into the ninth. And boy, was that an adventure. Edwin Diaz threw two pitches right down the middle to Willie Adames, who got a leadoff single. He then walked the next batter on five pitches, then gave up another base hit, which scored a run. You have no outs, two runners on. Diaz is completely floundering, and you got to wonder what the Mets do because they had nobody ready to go. Familia had pitched 2 days in a row, so he probably wasn't available. They already burned Lugo, May. There was no one there that could bail him out other than Drew Smith, and the Mets were not going to go to Smith in that spot, so it was Diaz's game to lose, and luckily he didn't, but he tried. Diaz picked up two strikeouts, but the first one to Jace Peterson was just a very fortunate situation, as the last pitch that he threw was a hanging slider right down the middle that Peterson just swung through, and really that kind of ended up being the difference in the game. Strikes out the next batter with nothing but fastballs, then gets a fly out to end things. And you just take a deep breath and say, okay, you got away with one because Diaz was not at his best. He hadn't pitched since last Tuesday, so there was definitely a lot of rust there that he had to shake off. The control wasn't there. The slider was not there at all. And he found his way through it, and that's what comes back to this being the most impressive victory of the season for the Mets. I'm sure if I dug through it, there's probably a couple other that would rival this game, but when you factor in the all-star Woodruff and the way he was throwing the ball early on, you look at the fact that McGill, it was a complete question mark coming into the start. Was he going to be able to continue living off what he did the first two games and just do enough to get the job done? Was he going to go deep enough for the Mets, get you through five? The bullpen holds up behind him. You have some timely hitting. It's just one of those games where a first-place team finds a way. And the Mets continue to build all these winning habits at home. The winning percentage near 700 at Citi Field. This team's legit. And that's a legit win against a really good team on the other side. A team that you could face in the first round of the playoffs this year in the NLDS. So hats off to the Mets for getting the job done. We will see if the Mets can earn another series victory later tonight as Jacob deGrom will be on the hill. Certainly gives them a great chance. But in just a minute, I want to talk a little bit more about Tyler McGill and his chances to remain in this rotation for the rest of the season. One reason to repair and maintain your cars yourself is that you're trying to save some money, right? So why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, maybe even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership that you could get at rockauto.com, a family business that has been serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. They have everything you could want, from engine control modules to brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks and have it delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and then choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How'd You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. One thing that you can always say when it comes to Mets pitching, if you pass Tom Seaver in the record books for anything, you're doing something right. Most strikeouts by a Mets pitcher over their first three starts in their career. You have Matt Harvey with 23, Steven Matz with 20. Now Tyler McGill with 19, moving just ahead of Seaver, who's in fourth with 18. McGill has a 3.77 ERA this season. He has 6 walks compared to those 19 strikeouts in 14 and a third innings pitch, a whip of 1.12, and through those 3 starts, the Mets have won all of them. They haven't done that in 23 years, which is courtesy of Jacob Resnick. The last time was Masato Yoshi in 1998. I was 3 years old, so I might have mispronounced Masato. Excuse that. I think I got Yoshi right, though. Anyway, the Mets have never gone 4-0 in a pitcher's first 4 career starts, so a little bit of history. McGill will be chasing his next time out. This guy just keeps getting the job done. He's a big kid, 6'7". He's throwing fastballs that can touch 97, averages 95. He's spotting the pitch well. The changeup looks like a real weapon. The slider, when it's on, looks like another. There's definitely a 3-pitch mix that he can repeat. I think at some point, there's probably going to be a start where things don't click for him and you're going to see a disaster. That's not me knocking him. It's just the reality. This guy is still raw. There's still development that needs to happen. He's learning on the fly. He's doing a great job. And the thing that you really like, it's his poise. It's his ability not to panic. And it's his aggressiveness. He continues to attack. And that's going to allow him to hopefully shake off a rough start when he has one eventually, because eventually everyone has one. And in the meantime, he's just doing what you need. He's going out, he's attacking hitters, he's giving you some length, and for now, you're taking that every single time as your 4th or 5th starter. It's enough. Now, can he hold up and continue to do what he's doing? That's where the question mark comes in, but I do think there is something to be said about a pitcher making his first tour of duty around the National League. That can help a guy. I think this is very similar to some other rookie seasons we've seen from Mets pitchers where they're able to have a lot of success as rookies. Sometimes that success kind of dissipates over time once the league kind of figures them out. Again, I'm not saying that's going to happen to McGill, but what I am saying is maybe he can make 15 starts this year without the league figuring him out, and he can get you through the regular season, and then hopefully you're healthy, and you don't really need him in the playoffs. That would be the ideal scenario, considering where this rotation stands right now. But looking back in the past, you have John Main in 2006, comes in, is huge for the Mets, has a 3.60 ERA in 16 games, made 15 starts, ended up being a big part of the playoff rotation, actually, because El Duque was down and Pedro was down. A lot of injuries, stepped in, pitched great as well. He had a 3.91 ERA in his second season, then he never had an ERA under 4 again. Ultimately, pitched for the Mets in parts of 5 seasons and then eventually washed out of the league. Did have a little stint with the Marlins in 2013 that completely escaped my memory. But regardless, that's one example. You have Robert Gsellman in 2016, rookie year, steps in, pitches in 8 games, makes 7 starts, has a 2.42 ERA. Seth Lugo that year as well had a 2.68 ERA and 8 starts out of the rotation. You have David Peterson last season, a 3.44 ERA. I think there is a lot of examples of guys that can do really well their first year through, and then the league's going to adjust, and that's where you prove that you are here to stay. And some guys do. Jacob DeGrom, obviously an extreme case, rookie of the year, goes on to be a Hall of Famer. I'm not expecting McGill to follow that career path, although there's probably some unrealistic Mets fans that are expecting that because of kind of the similar circumstances, made their debuts at the exact same age down to the day as far as DeGrom and McGill. But right now, when it comes to this team and what they're trying to do this season, and we're going to talk about Zach Scott's comments in the next segment where he talks about the deadline and he talks about trading for rentals. Carlos Carrasco, if he comes back, which it appears like his return is imminent, your top 4 is set. I keep saying this, but that's the truth. That is your playoff rotation right there. Jacob DeGrom, Marcus Stroman, Taijuan Walker, and Carlos Carrasco. If you go into a playoff series, let's say it's against the Brewers, there's going to be a lot of great pitching matchups there. But if you go in and you got DeGrom going twice, and you got Stroman, Carrasco, and Walker for the other 3 games, you got a great chance to win that series and move on to the NLCS. So with that, the Mets don't have to trade for a top-flight starting pitcher at the deadline. They also might not have to trade for any starting pitcher if Miguel keeps this up. I think that they would be wise to add some depth. Their depth has been completely erased with Lucchesi getting the Tommy John surgery, with Peterson's oblique injury, even with Jordan Yamamoto going out early on. They need to fill some stuff in here and just get some arms that can really, you know, protect you in case there is further injuries. But would I be surprised if the Mets made a trade to acquire a fifth starter, maybe over the All-Star break? The guy comes in, he helps the Mets for a couple of games. Carrasco comes back, and McGill ends up outpitching that trade addition and remains in the rotation for the rest of the season. Now, I probably wouldn't be that surprised. A week ago, I would be, but the guy keeps throwing the ball well. He's got a lot to work off of. He is showing more at those breaking pitches than I expected. The fastball is great. He's got a really good approach. And we'll see. This is a guy that, you know, might be a really nice piece for the Mets moving forward. Whether that is a continued starting pitcher that just locks down one of those spots for years to come, or if it's a guy that eventually transitions into the bullpen, you certainly think the stuff would play up there if that's where his long-term home was. But in a pinch, when no one expected it, they call this guy up. In three starts, he has given them all you can ask for. The Mets have won all those games. Even if they were to send him out on Saturday and he got knocked around and was never seen from again, McGill would be a Mets legend to some people. Shout out to Rob Pearsall. And, you know, he would be someone that was a huge contributor to this 2021 Mets team that has some pretty high hopes this season. So I will leave it at that with McGill. In just a minute, I want to talk about Zach Scott and what he said before the game on Monday, gave some big updates on some injured Mets, and also addressed his opinion about rentals at the deadline. Pretty interesting stuff there, so we'll talk about that. But first, I want to tell you about BetOnline, which is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Whether it's the NBA Finals between the Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks, Major League Baseball, or anything else, BetOnline has you covered. They even have awards, TV shows, and reality TV with real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. So prior to the game on Monday, Carlos Carrasco could be seen taking PFPs at Citi Field, and PFPs, of course, is pitcher's fielding practice. That is a great sign as his hamstring injury is obviously healed. Zach Scott said he will throw a live bullpen session by the end of the week. He might throw a couple of those live BP sessions and then begin a rehab assignment with the goal of joining the Mets before the end of July. So obviously, doing the math on that, he could be back maybe for that second turn in the rotation after the All-Star break. That's going to be big for the Mets, especially if they don't make a trade to address the rotation further. Now, Zach Scott also said that J.D. Davis could be back very soon. They think that if all goes well with his rehab assignment, they could get him back over the weekend. Scott also said that Robert Stock or Nick Trapino are going to be the options to start on Wednesday, so it looks like the Mets will be dipping into Syracuse to get a spot starter for that finale game against the Brewers. Robert Stock we saw as a Cub earlier this season when the Mets knocked him around for 5 runs in 4 innings. He did pitch in AAA Syracuse his last time out, 6 innings, allowed just 2 runs. He has been a starting pitcher so far this year, so he provides the Mets a little bit of length that maybe Trapino does not have. He has pitched 5 innings of relief since June 20th. He's pitching about every fifth day, but that does not really tell you how stretched out he has been. It's not quite the same as Stock, so that's why Stock is the more likely option to start. And again, you just kind of hope that somehow the Mets will get lucky again and maybe this guy will go out and give him 5 quality innings. And who knows, maybe the Mets are angling for a sweep by the time we get to that start. But that is the situation so far when it comes to the injured Mets, those being really the last two big names you can expect back in the near future in Carrasco and Davis. Noah Syndergaard still is the pie-in-the-sky addition that could swoop in September and really take this team to another level, but there's really no updates there. Now, I want to play this clip for you as Zach Scott was asked about his opinions on rentals at the deadline, and I thought his answer was just really fascinating. So here is Zach Scott, courtesy of SNY.
I think you need to be careful with rentals because you got to find the right guys and the right fit, and obviously the cost is a big thing. And you know, the one thing I say a lot to a lot of people around me in the game is that we got to remember that baseball is not the NBA. It's not one person has the opportunity to make as big of an impact. That's not to go down a slippery slope and say, why trade for any rental then if it's not going to make an impact? That, you know, you don't want to go down that far. But the reality is the game is designed to limit the impact of a single player, whether that's a starting pitcher or a hitter. So we have to be smart. It doesn't mean I'm opposed to rentals. You know, we're going to talk about rentals because they're usually the most available players, and their cost in the industry is typically most of the time fairly reasonable because of that. So not opposed, but need to be smart. There's going to be some teams that hold really high prices, and maybe they get them, and good for them. Or you actually might not see them move because they held those prices so high and for whatever reason, and then they didn't move those pieces. So we've got to be open-minded, like you said, to all opportunities.
Now, listening to that quote, it really is music to my ears because I've just been so tired of the Brody Van Wagenen era and the way prospects were just given away for rentals that didn't really amount to anything. I mean, Keon Broxton, Jake Marisnyk, at the deadline last year for no reason, where you had very little chance to make the playoffs in the expanded field and no chance to win a World Series, they trade players for Robinson Chirinos and Todd Frazier. Like, these are stupid moves. Time and again, even the Miguel Castro trade last year was just useless. I know Castro has had his moments this season, but again, I talk about Kevin Smith, the pitching prospect that was dealt. He has a 2.03 ERA in the minors this year with 56 strikeouts and 40 innings pitched. That guy could still be a Met. He could be part of the rotation next season. So with all of this purge of prospects, it is great to hear a GM who's level-headed and is able to assess value in the players that he has and the ones he's trying to acquire, and he's not going to make a bad trade. That is the beauty of what Zach Scott brings to this team. He has all the experience in the analytics. He's been working in front offices for a really long time with some really good teams with the Red Sox and everything else. And he's a guy that's not going to make a trade just to make a trade. And so many times the Mets did that. I think if the circumstances are correct, he may overpay. But he's going to know he's overpaying as opposed to what we just saw with Brody, where the Mets were just kind of making deals to make deals. They saw the player that they wanted. They asked, what's it going to take to get him? And they handed players over. And other GMs who are better at assessing these players were able to take advantage, of course, namely Jerry DePoto with the Mariners, but even the Astros fleeced the Mets a couple of times, even the Rangers. They got a player for Ariel Jurado last year. Ariel Jurado. This is different. You have a GM now that is going to be able to assess what they are getting exactly, and you can never be entirely sure if it's a good deal, but if you actually have a set of values in place, if you're able to look at your own players and say, this is what I think they're going to project out to be, you're going to know what you're giving up and whether it's worth it, particularly for a player that may not move the needle when you're talking about a 70 game sample size when you get to the deadline, maybe even less than that. That's the thing here. They're going to be able to say, okay, we're going to acquire, let's just say it's John Gray. John Gray's a rental, and maybe they compute that he would take the ball for, 12 or 13 starts down the stretch, and you would have to then factor the difference between a Gray start and a McGill start and decide if it's worth giving up prospect X, and the Mets are not going to get baited into making bad trades. I do think that they have to be aggressive this season, knowing they have a chance to win a World Series, but you don't want to be stupidly aggressive. You don't want to do something that might help you win this year, but is definitely going to hurt for the next 10 years. All of this also comes down to ownership, because if you have an anxious, panicky owner like a Jeff Wilpon, they're going to make a move when they want to make a move, and they might not listen to their baseball people. And I feel like Cohen has come in here and said, hey, I want my baseball guys to run this show. I want to give them all the resources they need. I want to give them a huge staff of analysts, and we are going to be one of the smartest franchises in baseball, and that's going to help us win. And I'm going to put that infrastructure in place, and then I'm going to let that infrastructure take over, and I'm not going to meddle. And as long as he keeps that attitude, as long as he keeps that philosophy, the Mets are in great hands moving forward, and they can be sustained winners that don't just have a fun season in 2021, invest it all this year, fall out and lose in the NLCS, and then suck for the next 5 years. But instead, wouldn't it be great that every summer you're enjoying winning baseball? I think that should be the ultimate goal. And at some point, you hope that with all those cracks at it, you're going to win a World Series, especially with the pitching that the Mets have this year. They're going to have as good of a chance as anyone. And I do believe the Mets will make a move at the deadline. But with this guy in charge and this guy running the numbers and making the decisions, I just don't think it's going to be a dumb trade. And the Mets have certainly made enough dumb trades over the last 2 years to last the next decade. So that is a beautiful change of pace. Anyway, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Right now, we got a giveaway for a signed photo of Al Leiter. So make sure you enter for a chance to win. Also, if you want to get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes, check out the Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts.